Thank you for tuning in to the Tech Gaming Podcast. This is episode 9-3. We got a lot to talk about tonight, providing Sean and I don't lose power during, one of the windiest nights in Los Angeles?
It's Pasadena Apocalypse 2011.
Is that where the apocalypse started, Pasadena?
Did you see the pictures I posted today? It's nuts in Pasadena. I cannot believe we had to go into work today.
We it was pretty bad in New Mexico today, and I had to drive to Albuquerque and then back. And the whole time on the interstate, I was like super key focusing, trying not to like blow off of the road. It was terrifying, actually.
Wow, the whole Western United States. How are you doing over there on the other side of things, Blue?
I'm doing okay. It's been raining almost constantly for the last week, though.
Okay. Well, tonight we got some game impressions. As always, we got trivia, we got answers to reader mail, maybe even a few crude jokes. Let's see what we got.
And maybe a fruit.
Maybe a fruit or two. An orange, like Pac-Man.
Let's have a fruit giveaway basket for Christmas. Whoever answers a question correctly gets a fruit basket.
Yes.
And what about a fruitcake?
Yeah.
That too.
Those are nasty. Anyway, let me introduce this who's who of hooliganism. First, we have Sean Nola Kirkland, the gaming machine from New Orleans. That didn't really
count. Yeah, it didn't.
We got the Monet of Santa Fe, Sage Simrage Morris Green.
I like that.
Yeah. How about the Sailor Moon wacko from the Home of Tobacco, none other than Eric Blue Swint? I couldn't rhyme anything with volunteer. Sorry.
Well, you could, but it's not very nice.
I want to know what you're thinking of. Anyway, before we talk about games, let's talk about the procurement of said things. How did your Black Fridays go?
I didn't buy a single thing.
Are you purposefully abstaining?
Sure. Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. I almost bought something for you.
I know, we talked about it. Yakuza. I would have appreciated that, because I still do not have that one.
So for the listeners and the other two, the one deal I really wanted, Walmart had $10 Yakuza 4 special, and it wasn't meant to be, because I went down there with the intent of buying, you know, one for me, one for Nola, and came out empty-handed. The closest, you know, store to me had an inventory of zero. So I walked over to Best Buy, bought Battlefield 3 for the 360, $30, and for no apparent reason, I think it was just a lapse of sanity, I bought Kinect Sports 2 for $25.
And that is a lapse of sanity. Best Buy's post-Black Friday deals seem to have been a lot better than their actual Black Friday deals. Like today they had Dead Space 2 for only $20, Collector's Edition.
Wow! Did you pick it up?
No.
No.
Okay. I'm trying to cut back on spending in general.
Okay. I did buy some things from Amazon, Best Buy, and GameStop, and so far only Amazon has really come through. How about you guys? Any purchases?
I ordered 4 things from Best Buy, and
I saw those.
All of them ended, huh?
I saw those.
Yeah, all of them ended up on back order. Fortunately, a great store manager was able to change the order on one of the games from online shipping to in-store pickup, and so I was able to get at least one of them. But I ordered Brutal Legend for the 360. That was like $3.
Mm-hmm. Dang.
Yeah, that I had to get it at that price. And the thing
that's not a bad game.
I'm surprised they actually had any copies left in stock at Best Buy when I went over there.
Oh, they way overprinted Brutal Legend. I remember that being a huge disappointment in how that sold, because there was so much hype before it, and they expected it to sell okay to begin with, and it sold better than okay. But by the time it released, they had hyped it up so much that they thought it was going to be like a huge, you know, milestone game, and they just printed so many copies of it.
And I think the same thing happened with Other M, because they're clearing that out for $5.
Yeah.
And a
if you
Metroid
did not buy
game
Other M at that price, you are evil and you don't deserve a Wii.
Okay.
But yeah, I also ordered Gears of War the triple pack. That was $8.
The triple pack.
Yeah,
that's
one, two, and the expansion.
Did you just say triple pack?
No, I don't think I was thinking.
Sage,
of
do you
pack.
Hear yourself sometimes?
I do, but it sounded like Robert said triple pack, and I was like, wow, that would be an interesting thing to receive for holiday gift. The triple pack.
So I ordered Gears of War: Moons Over Miami.
Yeah.
just testing your ears.
I'm sorry, Blue. Caffeine, otherwise I'm not going to make it through this show.
I ordered Gears of War. That's in the process of getting fulfilled. And my orders for BioShock 2's limited edition, that was $10. And
is that the limited edition in the big box, or was there another edition of that?
Yeah, that was the big box with the LP for the first game soundtrack.
They were selling that at the Target over by my office, the PS3 version, for $5 a long time ago, just because they needed to clear the shelves.
Wow.
I did not pick it up.
Shame on you.
What was one of those things? This sounds really dumb. Okay, $5. Theoretically, I'll buy anything for $5. But the boxes of those were so beat up.
Okay.
I just couldn't do it. I did that with Warcraft 3 and with Jade Empire. So I don't know if... Oh, I guess they must still do this if they did it with BioShock. But Target will do this thing where if a version of a game will come out, like a premiere version or a collector's edition or whatever, and then another box comes out later, they'll just try and get rid of all the original boxes. So Jade Empire, the premiere version, came with a soundtrack, and then Warcraft 3, they sold this. It's a really nice, they still have it, it's a big leather box with Warcraft 3, the expansion, DVD with all the cutscenes, and then two art books. And I got that for $5 because the Warcraft 3 box, like Battle Chest, had just come out. It was the same two games, but it was like $50. So
how much
did
you flip it for?
I didn't flip it. I still own that, even though I don't play Warcraft at all. I just think that box is cool. And Jade Empire was the same thing. It's like it was free soundtrack with purchase for the first, you know, couple hundred printed or couple thousand printed, and then they came out with the regular edition, which also sold for $60. So they're like, well,
didn't it come with an extra character as well?
It was a monk.
So. Yeah, right.
It's like
was the monk
limited
not, but
edition
the monk
has
not,
like the.
Hmm? Was the monk not in the regular? I mean, I've never played the regular edition, so I don't know.
I think it was basically if you put the disc, the second disc in the limited edition in the Xbox, you could download Monk for I can't remember the exact name of it, but it was some sort of a monk with a unique weapon or something like that.
See, I remember the monk in the game. I never tried putting my disc in the system. I just played the game. Like, yep, this is a soundtrack. This is a game.
Right. Okay.
Well, you know.
Sim Rage.
Jade Empire needs a sequel too.
Sim Rage, any purchases Friday?
Yes, but not anything video game related. I got well, actually that's not entirely true. I got a new 32-inch I wanted an LED, but the cheap one was an LCD, so I got a 32-inch LCD screen, which is nice because I've been playing on a crappy TV. So Batman Arkham City now looks spectacular. It's amazing. And I'm an audiophile, so I got a pair of really nice actual like audio speakers.
We wouldn't be able to tell from your microphone though.
Yeah, you sound like you're in an echo chamber.
I stopped using the microphone because I was told that here, I'll plug it back in.
No, don't do that, because that sound the Rock Band mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't have a stand for that, don't use that. But yeah, we gotta figure something out for your setup.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's what I got.
Awesome. So let's talk about game impressions. Who wants to kick things off? How about Sean?
Sure. So.
So you don't fall asleep.
Yeah, AT&T sent us the Sony Xperia Play 4G, which I guess came out a couple months ago. I didn't realize they ever made a 4G version of it until they sent it to us. And I don't want to talk about it too much because people got pissed off that we talk about
tablet talk part
tablet
two.
Talk.
Yes,
part three at this point. But I do want to talk about some of the games I played for it, and hopefully that'll kind of give you the idea of my experience with the system as a whole. But I played a lot of Dead Space and Galaxy on Fire 2. And Dead Space was interesting because it really it controls really poorly with the actual PlayStation controls, which I thought was really interesting because I don't think it's available on any other system, but the touchscreen controls on it are really good. And the actual analog controls of it basically don't work. You can't move from side to side very quickly for whatever reason. I guess they just didn't calibrate it properly. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get forced into using the touchscreen controls.
No, one question. I don't know about the phone version. Is it a side scroller? What is it?
No, it's a Dead Space game.
Oh, okay.
It is like
3D.
3D. It's playing Dead Space with PS2 graphics. And it's funny how it proves that you can make a really good third person action game on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
But every time it does a Dead Space thing, it does it so incredibly poorly that it's laughable. Like, your character is basically Isaac, but since they didn't want to use Isaac, his name is Vandal, but he's, you know, he's an engineer and he's got the engineer suit and all that stuff. And he's not a silent protagonist. And whenever he says something, it's basically, this is what you should be feeling right now. And it's not like they get the atmosphere all wrong. And because the screen is so small, they can't force you to chop limbs off. You still chop limbs off, but if you shoot something enough times, it'll just die.
That sounds like an awful port.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's one of those things that the controls are tight. It's interesting to me that I even though I was using the touch controls, I was still using the triggers to shoot.
Right.
Which got me to think that it doesn't really need a controller attached to the phone as we need triggers on phones for games.
Right.
I'm sure I'll feel the same way if I play Noba on that.
Am I crazy for thinking if I were to translate Dead Space to a phone, I would make kind of a turn-based 3D dungeon crawl?
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, I mean, that would be a cool game. I don't think Dead Space is what you would do with that.
Where you could aim for the different parts of, you know, their body, knock it off, you have a certain percentage.
Mean like a VAT system?
Yeah, exactly like that.
Maybe. I mean, this, I think, just suffered from the screen on the Play is not the biggest, most high-res screen in the world.
Yeah.
So they just figured, rather than forcing you to be accurate, which you can still be totally accurate, they just figured they would, you know, give you the benefit of the doubt and let you shoot them in the face enough times that they die.
But
there's some really cool, like, I never played Dead Space 2, so I don't know if this is something they added in that one, but you get a knife in this one, which gives you very Resident Evil style knife quick time events, which by the end of it, that's basically how I killed everything. I just let them come and attack me, and then I would do the knife quick time event and cut their arms off and then kill them that way, stomp on them once they hit the ground. But, I mean, it worked, like I said, and I was really impressed with that. And the other game I played a lot of was Galaxy on Fire 2, which is a sort of open-world space combat game where, you know, you take missions, you mod your ship, and you go out and shoot stuff in space, and you mine for materials, which I'm a sucker for, apparently. It kind of hit me really hard. I was like, hey, I love mining stuff. That's what I do in Skyrim and in Monster Hunter. And in everything I play,
I'm surprised you're not hooked on Minecraft.
Yeah, you know what? I'm surprised about that too. My girlfriend's cousins were playing Minecraft at Thanksgiving, and I would not have cared less. it's an official release now, though.
But
it was really good. But it kind of pushed the weirdness of having that controller there, because it still forced you to use the touchscreen a lot, especially in menus.
Right.
And it was weird because whenever, like, the interface, the Android interface, they've changed so that you can use the controller and use basic PlayStation language, like circle cancels out of things, X selects things, things like that. And then when you go into a game and all of a sudden the programmers didn't think to make that an option, it feels really weird.
Yeah.
Especially like when you're reaching all the way up. And in that game, controlling works best with the D-pad, not the analog, quote-unquote, sticks. But what ends up happening is if you ever have to press down and to the right, your thumb will tap the metal part, which is conductive, which is actually how the analog sticks work. And then it'll throw you way off into the corner. And that was really upsetting. But other than that, it's a really cool... It made me realize what everybody else is saying, that there need to be more space combat games, which they really do. And doing an open-world one like this was really fun. And if it weren't for the fact that I have to give the phone back to AT&T, I'd be playing a lot of that game.
I liked playing Age of Zombies, Half-Bricks, twin-stick shooter. And what I was I played with one thumb because I liked the tactile feedback on the D-pad. And then I had my other thumb on for the directional shooting.
Yeah, I can see that working. I just used the two thumbsticks for that. That game, by the way, if you play it start from finish, about a half an hour.
Okay.
And that, like, I got all the trophies in one playthrough, and I was like, wow, this game is really super short. But it is a lot, I will say it's a lot better than Burn Zombie Burn, which I believe was the same developers.
No. Half-Brick started off indie, and they did the Fruit Ninja, and the Burn Zombie Burn were the people who did the Warhammer for the PS2, the first-person shooter. I forgot.
Oh, that, really? Oh, yeah, shit, it's the one where you play as a Tau.
Yep.
Just, that game was doomed from the start. Who wants to play as a Tau? They're lame.
So yeah,
but that game is better though than Burn Zombie Burn. It was also incredibly similar though.
For me, I could have sworn it took me about 40 minutes, but I figure for $1, 40 minutes, hey, it's worth
it. Yeah, well, it was really short. I beat it on a train ride from my office to Union Station. So
wow,
yeah, it was super, super short, but it was funny because it is Half-Brick, and they make some Fruit Ninja references in there, which were really funny. Like the trophy for beating the game is okay. Now go play Fruit Ninja.
Right.
And there's a part where you're in feudal Japan and zombie ninjas will start showing up and you go, man, I wish I had a watermelon to distract these ninjas with.
Yeah, some nice references. Those guys are witty. So anything else you've been playing, Sean?
Played Voltron. That game is bad.
I played about 10 minutes of it and it was a twin stick shooter. I couldn't, well, the lion jump was kind of...
Well, and the physics of it are all wrong. And how do you screw up the physics in a twin stick shooter?
Yeah.
Like, it just blows my mind how they made this game and thought, this, we should release this. It sounds like a good idea. I mean, it's got so many cool, like, they have the remastered video and audio from the show. You know, everybody's giving them props because they kept the Peter Cullen stuff in there.
Yep.
I was about to ask about that.
Yeah. Whenever you pause the game, it goes, Voltron will return after these messages. And then we unpause. Now back to Voltron. It's weird because when you unpause it, they speed his voice up a little bit. So it's like, now back to Voltron. But and like the whole intro's in there. Every the beginning and end of every level, it shows a little clip from the show kind of setting you up for, here's what's going on in the story, except sometimes they're way too long, especially like the first level. It's entire intro of how they get in the lions and stuff.
Right.
And when you saw that the first time when you were 10, you were like, wow, this is so cool. And when
I thought 26, that
you're like, man, this is a long ass cutscene.
And I thought the same thing when I was watching that. I was like, wow, animation's really come a long way, because you really notice, like, okay, here's the 3-frame animation that they're playing for 5 seconds.
This is all filler.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
But I mean, it's still cool and nostalgic and whatever. I don't know if it's worth $10 or $5.
Five maybe. I'd buy five.
The problem is it's not fun. Like that, watching that first cutscene is really cool. Then to get to the second one, you have to play the game, and it's like...
Right. You take Voltron out of the equation, and it is awful.
Yeah, that is a... How do you screw up a twin-stick shooter nowadays, honestly? That is a formula that they have kind of got down.
You make it 30 minutes? I don't know.
But see, it was at least a fun 30 minutes.
Whatever. That was $1.99.
Those people... and then I played the Skyrim patch, which wasn't as broken for me as it was for everybody else, because I don't...
You have any backwards dragons?
I did not, but I fought 2 dragons at once.
Oh, wow. How'd that go down? Did you die?
No, I didn't. Actually, it was weird, because I was...
Did they fight
fighting
each other?
One... No, they kind of ignored each other.
Mm-hmm.
I fought one of them, and he flew up a mountain, and I guess somebody was at the top of the mountain waiting for him and killed him. And he was just far enough away from me that I didn't suck the dragon soul away, and I was like, shit. So then I reloaded my save, went back to where I found him, he lands, and then across the river is another dragon. And I was like, oh man, I'll kill you both.
And you killed them both and you were fine?
Yep. But no, since, like I said, I don't really deal with magics or magic resistance, because that's for weenies. And so that whole thing hasn't affected me, and I haven't seen any backwards flying dragons.
Did you see the video on YouTube of like 50 dragons that got spawned in like the PC version of Skyrim? They're all flying around and attacking and just destroying. I think it was River. What was it?
Riverwood.
The first town.
Yeah,
that's awesome. But that must have brought the game to an unplayable frame rate.
You'd be surprised. People are doing crazy shit with the PC version. There's one video where this guy is just spawning a whole bunch of cheese wheels on top of a mountain, right. And he just lets them all roll down the mountain, and then he goes and runs after all of it. And no, dude, seriously, it is genuinely beautiful. Go look for Skyrim Cheese Mountain or whatever. But it's like you watch it and you're like, wow, they're doing a lot of really cool stuff here. It's like that old Sony commercial with the bouncing balls. It's like that, only not in real life.
Very cool.
Huh.
That was all the things I played.
Okay.
Was there a patch for the PC too, or just for the 360?
Yeah, and
PS3.
There's been a patch for all of them now. Okay. But the general consensus is don't play it till next week when another patch is coming out, because right now the big things are it takes magic resistance out of the game. And it also makes dragons go backwards, and it doesn't fix the problem that the PS3 had, which was if you play for too long, eventually your frame rate will go to a crippling halt.
Your save file gets too big, I believe, over 6 megabytes.
Yeah.
It takes away magic resistance intentionally, or it was accidental?
No, it was an accidental thing. Oh. Basically, you can still have stuff with magic resistance, but it won't work.
Quality assurance isn't what it used to be.
It never was with Bethesda.
They try, man.
They do not. They have not put out a game that is not buggy as shit.
But they also put out a game that's so much bigger than anything else that's out there.
We've already got into that. They also put out Rogue Warrior.
that's Sean's ace in the hole. Boom, Rogue Warrior. What can you even say to that? You can't defend that. You can't win that argument.
You can't say shit.
No, Rogue Warrior is awful. But it did have Mickey rapping. So speaking of rapping, you guys ready to party?
Party? Sure.
Yes.
Tell me about this game that I was supposed to review.
Let's corpse party. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Yes, you are. I got a call from Rob saying, hey, Sean, you want to review corpse party? Yeah, that sounds really cool. All right, cool. I'll get it to you.
Sean,
all of a sudden I see on the thing today, oh, look, somebody's been playing Corpse Party.
Sean, tell me how much you love paper dolls.
Enough to review them.
Enough to review them. You hate paper dolls, so I bit the bullet on this one. Anyway, Corpse Party for the PSP we're talking about, it's every bit as twisted as the title indicates. Going in, you have this opening cinema. It's got the requisite moe schoolgirls, but some of them are bleeding to death. So after extended introductory dialogue sequence, which I don't think Sean would have made it out of, they tell
made
you,
it just begrudgingly.
Yeah, they tell you about these whores that are going on. Oh God, I did it again. Whore. What you're going on
I'm the one who's dirty.
Yes, there's my crude joke. So anyway, one of the girls, she proposes some kind of occult ritual so that the group of friends will never be apart, and I'll let you guess how that one turns out. Anyway,
God, I'm glad I didn't review this game.
I told you. It's part puzzler, it's part visual novel. You have 5 different chapters, and each one of those you control a different character. And mainly you move forward by searching for objects. There are some timed events, things like that. So far, it wasn't that interesting, especially when you consider that the lead characters are really JRPG cliche. There's the perpetually happy, perky girl. There's the shy teen boy who all the girls long for.
That's shy boy. Is that the guy who goes, huh?
Yeah. No, that's the tough guy who's the shy boy's friend.
But he has glasses, right?
Yes. No, the shy boy's got glasses. Come on. You always know that.
No, but the guy's supposed to go, huh, and then push his glasses up.
no, he's not the
Haven't you seen Girl Chan in Paradise?
No. How have I lived without this?
I should send that to you.
Okay. Anyway, I think what's interesting is the execution. Each chapter does things. It like changes the map around of the school. The game's translation. The dialogue is all spoken, and they did a really excellent job. It's in Japanese. And what's really amazing is the use of sound. They use a lot of stereo separation, so characters will speak from different locations, and the murders themselves. Are especially gruesome. You listen to the sound, you hear like knives cutting through flesh, you hear blood squirting. I mean, it's the ultimate Eli Roth torture porn JRPG game hybrid that I know you guys have been wanting. So actually, beyond the look of the game, the characters themselves, the paper dolls, don't really match. I mean, the characters on screen really look kind of 16-bit because reportedly, the game came. It's the second remake of a RPG Maker based title. But if you can get past the look of the game and you know some of the dialogue heavy elements, you know it's really kind of does some cool things with sound and the story is interesting.
If you can get past most of the game, there's a sound effect in there that
boing. It's not most of the game. It's if you can get past the first hour where it's really cliche, and then once you sink your teeth into it, it's pretty interesting. The one thing I think that I don't particularly like more than the first hour is the trial by failure. There's more ways to fail than there are succeed, and the save points aren't set up accordingly. So you have to replay certain elements when you screw up, and you will screw up. Because sometimes they don't give you as much information as you need to make a proper decision. So that's Corpse Party. Let's party with the dead girls. So, anyway, let's continue down Exploitation Road. Let me talk briefly about Saints Row the Third.
I want to play it so bad.
It's a game which...
Dildo Bat.
Yeah, which is probably funnier than it is good. GPD told me he'll probably going to come on the show in the immediate future, talk about his role in the recording process. And he told me you really got to stick with it because the game, you know, once you get past, it's got this really over-the-top introduction, which moves the player from one really outlandish situation to another. The combat itself, for me, felt really familiar. And even though on the PS3 version I put about 4 hours in, I never got to a point where I felt like, wow, it's really doing something unique with the sandbox kind of genre.
That's kind of its whole gimmick, is that it's not doing anything to the formula. It's just they took the formula that was already there and they made it so that all the pieces of it actually fit together, as opposed to like the GTA thing where it's like, we've got this sandbox and... Yeah, the shooting sucks, but you can drive. Well, yeah, but the driving sucks. But you got all these missions. But, well, yeah, the missions suck, too. But, man, like, you're this disgruntled guy, and it's like the cinematic. Well, the story kind of sucks, too. But, like, all together, you got this really big game, and it's cool, right? But with Saints Row, it's like, all right, so they've got that. So rather than trying to do anything new with that, just try and do all those little things better.
It is, well, not so much better, but it's a lot of fun to play. I mean, from what Blue said, you know, you use the giant dildo to club somebody. There's one point that I really liked is you're switching radio stations, and the two characters, they just start singing along to a Sublime song. There's one guy who auto-tunes mission orders to you. It's just consistently funny. And if you can get past, it doesn't do a single thing to the sandbox. It doesn't really expand it, but it makes it fun. It figures out, you know, little nuances here and there to make it easier, funny to play. Then you know, it's maybe worth the $60. Though I'd probably encourage some people to wait for, you know, some kind of sale or price drop. Okay. Anyway, last thing I'll mention today is Heavy Fire Afghanistan, which might as well be called Heavy Fire Atlantis, as slow as everybody moves. in case you're not savvy, it's kind of under the radar. This was a budget Wii, PS3, and PC game. It's being put out by Mastiff. I know that a lot of recent Lycan games, Lycan shooters, they hide their lack of ambition with with a little bit of creativity, there's games like The Shoot, and you could even though Gunslinger was much better, what they do is they set the context in a theatrical setting, so the developer only had to animate like this rotating picture of an enemy target instead of a real, you know, lifelike human enemy. And Heavy Fire tries to straddle the line. So you get terrorists who, you know, they roll, they tumble, they peek, they do the same thing around corners. It doesn't feel too far off from the FMV actors of Area 51.
Not Area 51, Lethal Enforcers, but yeah, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, I think 51 was probably like the next generation.
Yeah, it was.
Was really rough looking. So anyway, you have fairly good looking environments. They are washed out, but that is an aesthetic effect. You got some decent looking weapons and really cheap looking enemies. But I think the worst parts are the muzzle flash, which it kind of looks like somebody drew them on screen. And then the sound of enemy fire. I'm sure that they could patch this, but even if they're really close, you know, they're 10 feet away, all the tangos, all their AKs are muted. You know, they sound like pop guns. So I guess it's okay for $20, but really hard to recommend over House of the Dead Overkill or my favorite, the Time Crisis 4 pack.
See, so. I'm interested to see. So the first two Heavy Fire games were WiiWare titles, and I'm wondering how much those sold for and why they switched to box copies for the Kinect and PS3 versions. Because I'm wondering if you saw that for, you know, $5-$10 for a rail shooter,
right?
I don't think that's so bad. But right. Once you start putting things in boxes nowadays,
it's just a weird game because it looks decent, you know, on the PS3, but there's little things like the cover system. You take your Move controller and then you have to hold down the top button, the one that's not the trigger, and then you move it in a certain direction. And then from there, you can move it to reload, and it just kind of feels clunky. And it's like, why does it matter where you're taking cover? You know, it's all kind of the same. Mm-hmm. So, and then the enemies, they don't really, you know, there could be 10 on screen, and they never really shoot you. there's a Metal Gear Solid exclamation point that appears above their head when they're getting close to shooting you, but
it's like Virtua Cop. Virtua Cop used to have the big targeting.
Yeah, but Virtua Cop, at least they would hit you every once in a while. These guys, oh man, they're really bad. So
Virtua Cop taunted you because you would get in that first level and you're like, oh, you're gonna show me which ones I'm supposed to shoot at? This is so easy. Mm-hmm. And you get to like the second or third level and there's targets everywhere and you're like, I can't do this.
Remember the difficulty. So yeah, that's Heavy Fire Afghanistan. And Sean, I'm surprised that you remember the first two Heavy Fire WiiWare games.
Well, it's funny because
you deserve a medal for that.
When you put that on the outline, I was looking for, I thought there was another game called Heavy Fire. And then I was like, oh, yeah, there were WiiWare games. But I thought there was like an old Saturn game called Heavy Fire, but I guess not.
What was that what was that PopCap game that was a side-scroller? What was that called? Something Fire? Is that called Heavy Fire? Blue, do you know?
PopCap,
side to side. You have like a little tank at the bottom of the screen.
PopCap, side to side, round and round.
Well, since we don't know, let's move to Samurai Age, tell me what you've been playing. Any PopCap games?
No PopCap games. Okay. I played some Skyrim. I have finals coming up, so I haven't really gotten to play much since the weekend because I've been doing review all week.
You've been writing reviews?
I wish I'd been writing reviews. No, I've been reviewing for finals.
For Corpse Party, of course.
Yes, for Corpse Party, which actually, from your description, even though Sean doesn't like it, I totally want to play.
It was the Eli Roth JRPG that did it for you.
Totally. That got me all fired up. No, I've played some Skyrim. I haven't gotten a patch, but I haven't played since this weekend. Mm-hmm. But I had not noticed anything wrong with it. I'm sort of now afraid to see what the patch has done to it. But the other thing I've been playing is because my friend finally visited me who had bought Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney for me. Right. So I finally got to play some Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney.
What you think?
I really like it so far. It It makes me want to go study the law in Japan because it's definitely not realistic to how American law works. Well, like, the courtroom setting is sort of realistic, but you don't actually get to, like, argue with prosecution in front of the judge and wait.
You sound like me. You're asking for realism in Phoenix Wright?
Kind of.
That wouldn't be very fun at all.
Well, wait until you see some of the hairstyles in the later games.
But while we're on the subject of the later games, do not play those games back to back to back because you will burn yourself out on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what I did. I bought all three of them at once and I tried to play. I got all the way through the first two games and then shit. I bought those games in 2007 and I have not looked at the third one since I started playing it.
Oh man, really?
I just got so burnt out on it. I love those games, but man, I cannot play them anymore.
Huh. Well, I'll keep that in mind. Yeah, no, because I'm liking it so far. I mean, it's not. I like how the characters, you know, they move pretty realistically. They talk when they're actually, like, their mouths move when they're talking a lot of the time, which I always appreciate stuff like that. So they're not just, you know, vacant paper dolls.
Paper dolls.
Always about paper the dolls. Hate on the paper dolls. But I don't. I think that you definitely have to be okay with games that are a little less intensive, which I think is one of those things that's a difference between. Because we have so many people that, you know, comment on the fact that Deagle plays a lot of JRPGs and what's that about. And I think part of playing JRPGs and enjoying them is you have to be okay with watching a lot of story that you're not actually playing. As compared to something like Skyrim, where you pretty much play all of it. You're not really spending a lot of time watching stuff happen. But no, I like the characters. I like the action. I thought it was crazy that you're sort of actually.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Really? Is that a spoiler?
Yeah, that's a spoiler for people who haven't played it.
8, 9, 10 years old?
Yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, sorry.
Remember, Sean hasn't played the third one, so.
Spoiler, you can insert it. Well, I haven't either. You can insert a little blip spoiler word or something before I say that. But yeah, no, that threw me for a loop, which was cool because I don't often. I mean, it's neat when you're like going along with a game that's a lot of story mode instead of action stuff. And then so instead of having action, they like surprise you by having story elements that you sort of didn't see coming that hit you out of left field.
Yeah, and I think the reason that works for Phoenix Wright is because how many times have you played a cartoon lawyer game?
Right, mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, it's not like you're going and fighting another evil force, or you're in another high school.
Right. No, I think it's unique.
Sean, you're really mad, aren't you? The venom is being sent through the airwaves as we speak.
I'm just saying, it works for Phoenix Wright.
Okay.
Don't get any bright ideas, Japan.
What about Harvey Birdman?
I love that
came out after.
But the Harvey Birdman game is actually not terrible.
I haven't played the game. I love the show.
Harvey Birdman is a Phoenix Wright spinoff, basically. Because it's also developed by Capcom, and they just basically took that exact same formula and put Birdman in it.
Oh. But see, that's different. Birdman's different. Not the game, the character. Therefore, it's
funny.
Oh, is it? That's good. Anyway, Phoenix Wright, I recommend it. I like it. It actually did get me fired up to more heavily consider courtroom law. It's not the only thing that has done so, but after this semester, I'm actually pretty interested in courtroom law, and Phoenix Wright played a hand in that.
Good, so, I was worried you were going to turn into the mom from 2 Weeks Notice.
What? Why?
I don't know. There was a picture of you on Facebook the other day, and I was like, oh my god, she's a lawyer. She's going to turn into the mom from 2 Weeks Notice. She just needs to find a bald hippie guy to marry, and that'll be it. Her life will be over.
The only bald person I know is Deagle.
And damn it, I'm no hippie. I don't even know what the hell is 2 Weeks Notice.
It was a movie with Sandra Bullock.
Say no more. I didn't see it then.
What was the British guy? Hugh Jackman. Not Hugh Jackman.
No.
He's Australian. Stupid,
what's his face?
He's was it Ryan Reynolds?
No. He's in Love Actually. And he's in... Hugh Grant.
I knew it was a Hugh. Yeah.
Fucking Hughes. Yeah, no, good game, enjoyable. But it does make me want to go. I want to go abroad, and I may actually end up studying in Tasmania for a semester. But one of my goals is to maybe also go study in Japan, and it really got me interested in, like, I wonder how much their legal system differs from ours and how much this game is actually realistic to their legal system.
I've heard it is not at all.
Oh, well. God, Sean, way to ruin my hopes and dreams.
It is realistic to the manga.
Well, that's not what I want to hear. Anyway, that's pretty much all I've been playing.
Sean's concerned with authenticity this week.
I'm not concerned with authenticity. I just don't want her to get her hopes up and then get there and be like, this is...
But in Phoenix Wright's world.
Yeah, but hey, if you guess my hopes before I go, maybe I won't even go. Jeez.
Well, I've heard that if you like the games, you should check out the manga, because they don't... We call them Phoenix Wright here in the States. They call them Ace Attorney there because the comics... It's sort of like Phoenix Wright was only in a season, and then he became the big star because of the game, but I guess the comics deal with a bunch of different lawyers. So,
from my understanding, Phoenix Wright's law and Tasmanian tort law are one and the same.
They actually...
Come to Tasmania.
Little known fact, they have a team of programmers there that reprogram Phoenix Wright for every case that they have to try.
Really?
Yes. So when you go to Tasmania, you actually walk into the room and you have Game Boys linked up against each other and you play like a competitive version of Phoenix Wright. Is the evidence, if you can find.
But you have to bring your own link cable.
That would be the weirdest fucking legal system ever in the world.
Have you guys seen the trailer for the Phoenix Wright live action movie?
Yep.
No?
Yep. You've been on the summer show.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that looks hilarious.
Swim.
Yeah.
A lull on the conversation.
What have you been playing?
I Redboxed Skyrim.
Oh, good.
We're never going to escape this game.
Did you not see the outline?
I did. I just think it's funny that we bring it up in three times instead of talking all at once.
You guys don't follow the rules, damn it.
Is it funny that you're hearing more about Skyrim than Call of Duty? At least on like Twitter and stuff like that?
It's because that's the team that we're following. Trust me, there are people playing Call of Duty. I had to play Call of Duty when I wasn't playing Minecraft on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You make it sound like a punishment. Yeah. Okay.
It's okay.
Harvey Birdman. It's not terrible.
Yeah. Sean, I want to hear...
Better than Bone Town.
But yeah, I Redboxed Skyrim after... I restarted Oblivion a few days earlier since everybody was talking about Skyrim, and I never finished Oblivion. So I started a new save over in that, and the more I played it, it finally clicked with me. I tried to play it several times through, and I always got bored or distracted or went on a killing spree, and my character was pretty much screwed up forever. So I just started a new save, and I think I'm about 14 hours in, maybe a little more than that, and I got about, you know, about 12 hours in, I checked Redbox, and they actually had Skyrim in. I was surprised they did. And, I rented it, and, oh God, that's good.
Isn't it, though?
Huh?
I said, isn't it, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, Sean, you're now happy about Skyrim?
No, I'm always happy about Skyrim. I just don't like Bethesda as a company.
Okay.
Kind of like me and Capcom games. I like the games themselves, but not the company.
Yeah, exactly.
And, but coming off of, you know, playing Oblivion for about 12 hours or so and going right into Skyrim, it's amazing how Oblivion looks like a last-gen game. And I mean, I guess considering how early in the Xbox 360's lifespan it came out, I guess you could almost consider it like a last-gen title.
Yeah,
I mean,
the first year of 360, if you go back and look at that stuff, it's a bizarre, like, half-step in a generation.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like in the in Oblivion, you know, the ground doesn't look. I mean, honestly, it looks like a high polygonal count Nintendo 64 game because, you know, you have like level, you know, the world's kind of, you know, mapped out, your architecture and stuff like that. It's mapped out, but there isn't much like life on it. It's just like a grassy texture or snowy texture on it, and then some rocks jetting out from it. And with Skyrim, you know, you have the grass, you know, that's just blowing in the wind constantly. And I mean, it's amazing what a difference that 5 years has made for Elder Scrolls. It's,
you know, they were able to give weight to the different branches of trees, so when the wind hits it, it would sway accordingly. I thought that was kind of cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's honestly, Oblivion feels like you're just kind of roaming around a really large state park or something like that. And with Skyrim, it feels like this epic, you know, country that you're just wandering through. And it's, I mean, I've fallen in love with it. It's on the top of my Christmas list this year.
Sweet.
But yeah, it's. I'm trying to think. I did encounter one funny glitch, I guess you could say. Have any of you guys seen animals run into water and then run along the bottom?
Rabbits.
Goats. Goats do that all the time with me, and deer. They'll jump in the water, and then I'll be like, oh, they're going to drown. And then they'll just all of a sudden
run right back up out the of the other current, side.
They're out. Yeah.
That's been my favorite glitch in it so far. But
that was my thing coming off of Hydrophobia, though, because earlier on in Hydrophobia, before people get masks, you kind of coax them into chasing you into the water, and you try and stall them for long enough that they'll drown. And so I kept trying to do that in Skyrim, and I was like, oh, they didn't figure out that animals can drown.
Well, and I think people can't drown either, well, unless that's a glitch. But when I was in one of the caverns, there were some bandits that the first time it was fine, but I screwed up and died and had to reload. And they got stuck in the water, and like they were on alert, like they could see me and they wanted to come fight me. But for whatever reason, they wouldn't come out of the water. So they were just like standing on the ground in the water, not drowning. And I was like, what the, why? But that might have been a glitch, I suppose.
I noticed another glitch when I was going to, forgive me for forgetting the name of that one town, you know, right, the one you leave before you fight your first dragon.
Riverwood. Same one. No, it wasn't earlier.
Riverwood. Is the one with like the with the guard towers.
Oh, Whiterun. Whiterun.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, when I was coming into Whiterun for the first time, you know, there was like a farm or something on like the outskirts, you know, just outside the castle walls. And as I'm walking up, this group of hunters that are, I guess, from the local Hunters Guild or whatever in Whiterun or whatever, it's like they were just killing this giant. I guess it was a giant who lived in that section, and they're talking to me like I joined them in the quest, but I hadn't. I mean, that was the first time I'd even been into town or met them or anything. And they're talking to me like, "Oh, hey, you didn't kill the giant or something to that effect." And I thought that was a little odd.
But yeah, that's a scripted thing because it happened to me too. It's started a quest.
Oh,
like if you check your quest thing, your quest is now you can go join their little mercenary group.
I was wondering. I was thinking, I don't remember even like encountering any of these people.
No,
and
that's normal.
Yeah.
But I actually did have a glitch in Solitude that was a city glitch where I went in one of the like back doors into Solitude, like in the cliff wall, and I encountered this guy who was telling me about an execution. Like I talked to him, and one of my prompts that I could ask him was, "So you were all fine with that execution that we just watched, huh?" And I was like, "I didn't just watch an execution." And then when I went to the front of Solitude, and it was like, "You have discovered Solitude," I saw the execution block and realized that it must just have not loaded. So I left out the front door and came back in thinking maybe then it would load it. but it skipped out. Like, it didn't load anything, as though because I had talked to that guy, like, it was like, oh, you must have seen the execution. Nope. So it started a quest, my talking to him, and I still have no idea what execution he was talking about.
Oh, well. Oh, Bethesda.
Anyway, one of these days we're not going to talk about that game. Until then,
no more dragons.
Talk about it.
How about instead of talking about Skyrim, I talk about Oblivion? Big change, right?
No,
not really.
Yeah, I mean it. I've been really pleased with what I've seen of it. I'm going to get it. And I checked out the third person camera angle. I like playing games in third person, but I played Oblivion in first because the animation in third person is absolutely awful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's like I switched over to the third person in Skyrim, and I didn't immediately switch back. I didn't really want to switch back because it's
I play the entire game in third person. The only time I ever go into first person is when I'm picking stuff up off tables or using a table because I don't want to steal anything.
Yeah.
I do it when I'm shooting with a bow, but otherwise I pretty much stay in third person.
But yeah, that was pretty much my day in Skyrim.
Word. Cool. And you also played Phantasy Star. You should have played Phantasy Star Portable. Persona 3 Portable. I see.
Yeah, I've been balancing Oblivion and P3P for the last about week and a half or whatever. And I'm trying to keep at it because I forgot where I was in Persona 3, so I'm trying to not go more than a couple of days without at least playing a little bit of it, and I'm starting to get up to the point where Yamagishi, I think it was, mm-hmm. Joins the group, and I'm just about ready to have another one of those full moon boss battles, so I'll probably have that in the next hour or two of gameplay.
Since some of our listeners asked us about it, can I use this to segue into the Vita UMD discussion?
As soon as we do our giveaway.
By all means.
Can we do a quick giveaway mm-hmm. first?
Yes, give something away.
All right. We're going to give away 5 soundtracks for Zone the Battleground, which is a kind of indie first-person shooter that's looking pretty good. So just leave a comment. The musical artist is Kenny Clemson, and from my brief listen sounded pretty hot, so leave a note indicating that you want to win a soundtrack from Zone the Battleground. Okay, take it away, Sean.
Bird. So I kind of just expected somebody to send this in on the mailbag, but it's a discussion I wanted to have with Blue for a while, but I want to know what you think about the PSP misnamed UMD transfer program.
Wait, what's the name?
It's called a transfer program instead of a coupon program, which is what it is.
Oh, okay.
And everybody's pitching a tantrum about it because it's like, I bought this UMD and I can't play it on my Vita, and all you're doing is giving me $5 off the download of it, which if you just download it off PSN to begin with will still work. And everybody's pitching a tantrum about it because they're calling it a transfer program when really it is just a coupon program. Like,
Has that been confirmed in the United States as being
$5? It hasn't.
Okay.
It hasn't been confirmed even coming to the United States. And with the people reacting to it the way they are, I seriously doubt it will.
Hmm. So people $5 is better than
nothing. $5 is $5. Yeah, exactly.
For,
like you
a
can't...
lot of games. So... Like last week, I bought Disgaea 2 for $15. ZHP was $20. I bought Half Minute Hero, $10. I mean, that would have brought it down to $5. That's some good stuff right there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean... $5 is great and all, but isn't there like some concern that the memory sticks for the current PSP won't work with the Vita? Is that?
Well, no, it won't, because the Vita uses a proprietary memory thing. But I'm just saying, if you download it off PSN,
have you seen the prices? Why the hell?
Yeah, they're pretty ridiculous. None of those prices have been confirmed for the US yet, though.
I think Sony confirmed or corrected the prices of the 4 and 8 gigabytes. I think the 8 gigabyte is $39 and 4 gigabytes is 5, I want to say, something
that's
like that.
Still pretty ridiculous, though.
And they did not correct the prices for the other higher capacity ones, like the $130 or $120 64 gigabyte card. Jeez. Hype dead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see how that all plays out, because the PSP Go is 8 gigs, and you can fit a lot of PSP games on that, but Vita games are going to be
enormous,
easily 3 or 4 times that size, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's built quick. Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up. As far as transferring games that you've downloaded go, you just log in with your PSN account, register
your
Vita.
What about the save files for them? Is there any way of getting them over to the Vita?
Yeah, you throw them up on the cloud and pull them back down.
Yeah,
that's not hard at all. Like I said, the transferring thing, I've already been over this on the show. Everybody's making a big deal out of transferring with the new PSP games and Vita games, but I've been doing that for years with the PS1 classics, because all you have to do is hook it into your PS3,
mm-hmm.
pull the save file down. That's it.
I think if something is not baby doll easy, people tend to get a little freaked out about it.
That is something with a patch. They could make it real easy where you hit the triangle and then the attached save file can transfer over, the way you...
What I think is funny is it's actually more difficult to do with the Metal Gear Solid collection than it is to just do it through the regular PS3 interface. Like, there are more steps to it.
Speaking of transferring things, Corpse Party acted a little weird when I was transferring it over to my PSP. First of all, it didn't sit in my PSP folder. And then after I transferred it, it asked, do you want to copy it to your PSP? So I said yes, and it said, you don't have rights for it.
That's because you only have rights on two. You have, how many PSPs do you have hooked up into your account?
One.
You also have mine. Pretty sure, because I've removed PSP games.
Okay.
So you need to change that, because you only have two of each starting.
No, but that is the only game that's done that. And I downloaded
it. It's been since the 18th of November. You need to go and...
No. Just a minute ago, I said I downloaded Disgaea 2 last week, Half Minute Hero. None of those acted the same way. There's something quirky about that one, because the actual file itself, it doesn't even fit. It won't go and find its home in the PSP folder. It just kind of sits there. Yeah, it's some kind of quirky thing.
Yeah. Get on your shit, Sony.
So you can get on Corpse Party, Sean.
Yeah.
That's gross.
But I just wanted to ask, because it kind of linked back into that DLC discussion. Like, if you feel entitled to that code, do you still feel entitled to that code when a new system comes out? Should they have given you vouchers for Super Nintendo games for Nintendo games when Super Nintendo came out, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough, because, I mean, online structures have really improved since the NES and the Super NES were out. You know,
anyone who bought it download, if you bought it download, it's ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Which is what I've done. I don't have, like I said before, the only UMD game I still own is my Japanese copy of Mega Man Legends.
It kind of sucks for those games that were UMD only, though.
Yeah, but
Kingdom Hearts, and I think it's Square Enix that was like that.
Yeah, and Square Enix, because I was going to make that complaint too when I heard this, but they've actually gone back and corrected that, because I remember Final Fantasy Tactics was one of the big ones that they didn't put up. And that's there. So is
Dissidia.
Dissidia is up there again. So they've corrected that, because I know these companies know that people are going to want to rebuy PSP games down the road.
Sure.
So it makes sense for them all to be up there.
I've heard PS1 games aren't going to be compatible with the Vita from at launch.
Yeah. The official statement is at launch. It just sounds like they haven't finished the. Emulator for that yet, which is weird, because it seems like by now they've done that enough times that they would.
And if they can get it cooking on an Android,
yeah,
with all the power of the Vita, it should be no problem at all. I don't know. Do you think it's the emulation issue? Or do you think it's more of a legal issue?
It could be. It could be that publishers are complaining that their rights don't extend that far. That's why Capcom's been struggling with that internally, which is why you don't see a lot of Mega Man games up there. They specifically said that Legends will never ever be released again because they don't have the rights to the voice acting in those games.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's like, that's why that's the same reason why Silent Hill, when they're, because they're redoing it, they're making them high def, but they actually have to go through and basically they couldn't just redigitize the sound because there was one guy who said, the guy who plays what's his face, the main character, said that he didn't want, he probably asked for more money, but basically he didn't give them permission to use his voice. So they had to go back through and redo the voices. So the voices don't all actually match up because they didn't redo the game. They're just making it, you know, high def, and they couldn't just transfer the sound over because he was not okay with it. So they had to re-record all the sound, but it doesn't like quite match.
Thanks, D-Bag, for ruining.
Right? And he's like some nobody guy. Like, he's not even, he's not a big deal. He has never done anything else. He has a job in like business now. And he's not even like a current voice actor. And he doesn't need the money. And he just was like being an idiot about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like, I think a big part of this is, so you figure, I'm just using Square as an example because I know that if this is the case, they're probably one of the big players in it. But how many times is Squaresoft, well, Square Enix, released Final Fantasy VI.
And, I don't know.
And if when the Vita launches, the copy of Final Fantasy VI I already own works and theoretically works indefinitely on every Sony system I ever own from now until infinity.
Right.
That's, you know,
a loss.
$30. Yeah, $30 per generation that they're not getting anymore, basically. Right. So I'm sure there's a lot of companies that aren't happy with that idea. I'm sure when they put things on
$30.
Well, you know what I mean, like however much they.
I see.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, on the.
I thought $10 per gen.
Yeah, it's $10. Yeah, that sounds more reasonable. But I'm just saying that like the GBA version.
Oh, okay.
But I think that's on why average. Companies release new editions that are like, hey, this is new. Like, it's the same game, but we added something.
Yeah.
And we made it high def because you can't. I mean, I feel like it's publisher suicide to try and insist that people have to repurchase your game every time they upgrade to a new
system.
But
that's what they've done for the past 20 years, and it's worked really well.
I mean. Yeah, but I think other companies that don't go that route are more successful. The ones that are like, we're not going to charge you more money for the same game, but we're going to release a new edition that has other shit in it. Because that's like, people feel good about buying that as opposed to like, well, I got to buy this copy again or keep my old system.
I don't know. Mega Man X Collection didn't sell very well, but Final Fantasy VI for PSN and GBA both sold really well, and they did nothing to either one of those games.
But did Final Fantasy sell really well because it's a well-known game and a bunch of new generation players bought it, or because the same old people bought it?
The same old people bought it. Final Fantasy fans will, I mean, maybe they're a bad example, but they will buy anything that says Final Fantasy on it.
No, I agree, but my point was that Final Fantasy is such a big name that, like, yes, you're going to have people willing to buy it again, but also it's something that gets purchased by new gamers all the time, like as kids grow up and they've heard about this game. Mega Man's more vintage. Mega Man's not, I mean, I don't know. I know more people who are like, oh my god, Final Fantasy, than people who are like, oh my god, Mega Man. I mean, I know people who are old school gamers who are like, I love Mega Man. But I don't hear as many new kids who are just getting into gaming being like, man, I'm gonna go spend my money on Mega Man. They're like, no, I'm gonna go spend my money on Final Fantasy.
I disagree.
You think?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should run some numbers. I want stat compilations. 6,
18, 14, 42.
I want to get compilations of statistics and figure this out.
7.9.
20 minutes into this conversation, I don't think we answered the original question that I had.
We'll run it through a Tasmanian court of law.
But that's okay. Do we have an interview this week, Deagle?
Shit, no, you didn't see one on the outline. No, there's no interview this week. I'm sorry, I've been slacking.
That is okay. Do you have any trivia questions for me?
No, none of those either. Just kidding. Got some trivia.
Do you have a bag full of mail?
No, I have trivia.
A bag full of something.
Do we have an outro?
This is where the show ends. No, we got some trivia. You guys ready?
Yes.
I'm ready.
This week, players are able to step into Puddle, Konami's new liquid physics based puzzler. So which of the following games did Paris-based developer Nico Entertainment not make a splash with? Splash. A, Charlie's Angels for the GameCube and PS2. B, Crazy Frog Racer for the PlayStation 2. C, another ducking platformer, a DSiWare title. Or D, Hercules Chariot Racing, a WiiWare title.
The frog one.
I want to say Charlie's Angels.
I'm going to go with Hercules.
Another ducking platformer.
Really? None of us were right?
No, I just made that title up. Just want to put it
on. It's so French.
And here I was thinking, like, man, I really want to check that one out. I'm going to write it down and look it up later so I can play it.
But Sean said it was so French, but then he said Crazy Frog didn't fit in.
Because I figured that you would think that they would think that's derogatory.
Exactly. Number two, when in France, you might want to pick up the Sly Cooper game to go with your Royale with cheese. Just how would you ask for Sucker Punch's renowned title on the other side of the Atlantic? A, Sly Raccoon. B, Secret Agent Cooper. C, Debonair Raccoon. Or D, Sly the Cat Burglar. Burglar.
Shit. I remember somebody telling us this at E3. I want to say Sly the Cat Burglar.
By the way, do you guys know who started E3? One of the entities? Some of the people behind GamePro, which is closing their doors this week, were behind starting E3.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why are they closing their doors? I hadn't heard that.
Of GamePro? Yeah.
Yes, they weren't making money.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Pro tip. Shoot it until it dies.
What?
Pro tip. Shoot it until it dies. That was like a tip they gave for Doom.
Yeah, pretty much any game or life.
What were answers A and B?
Sly Raccoon and Secret Agent Cooper.
I want to say Secret Agent Cooper.
Okay. I'm going to go with Sly Raccoon.
And you would be right. Correct answer.
Yay!
Sly Raccoon. When I was about 2 or 3 years old, I used to introduce myself as Fly Raccoon. So, which
really?
Was Sly Raccoon. Yeah. I embarrassed my parents no end. They asked me, what's your name? Fly Raccoon. Number three.
Awesome.
I was into the Tanukis early. Number three, Sly's first adventure sent him into or after the Thievis Raccoonus. Just what is that artifact? Is it A, an album of Sly's ancestors' thieving history? B, a statue of the Sly's pilfering grandfather? C, a map of all the artifacts scattered around wealthy Parisian estates? Or D, a 106-year-old painting of a raccoon.
A.
It's A.
Who said A? Like, really quick.
I did.
It was
Sean did.
Because I made you buy that game. Oops.
You made me buy the third one.
Oh, did I? Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, all the Sly games are out this week on PSN. That's why we're going crazy for Sly Cooper.
Well, I was going to say the statue, but since those guys are so convinced, I guess I'll go with A.
Yeah, correct answer. A, the album. Good job, guys.
I remember that from trying to play Sly 1 about 3 or 4 years ago and like, screw it. Meh. Backlog it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed Sly Cooper.
That's
okay.
How I was, too. I enjoyed it, but I did also backlog it.
Mm. Number four, when Sly made his way to the land of the rising sun, the raccoon sported a few changes. What were they? A, an English theme song called Blackjack. B, an animated introduction and ending. C, an additional difficulty level. D, A, B, and C. Or E, A, and B. Just for
Wait,
you.
What?
F, take it out.
Yeah.
A and B.
E, put it in, and then F, take it out.
And then put it in again.
A and B.
I'll go A and B, too.
I don't even remember what they were, so I'll go with those two, whatever.
Correct answer, yes. E, which was A and B. Good job.
All right.
Sean's the sly aficionado. Totally. Number five. Long before Twilight pitted vampires and werewolves against each other for the love of the girl, Dimitri and John Talbain probably had the hots for Morrigan. Which developer handled the conversion from arcade to PS1 hardware? Was it A, Capcom, B, Psygnosis, C, Ocean Software, or D, Rage Software?
I see Psygnosis.
I think I'll go with Ocean.
Capcom Rage. We'll go with Rage.
Correct answer. Sean was on a roll this week. Psygnosis.
Shit.
Boom.
Yeah.
Ocean would have been my next guess, though.
Yeah, I was one of those guys. So now we got Blue's shmup question, which I'm looking forward to.
All right.
So put on your shmup hats, people.
I hope you guys know 16-bit.
Uh-huh. All I heard was Parodius, and I got all excited. What?
Okay, the Raiden name should be familiar to all shmup fans.
Yes.
But the U.S. publisher of Raiden Trad on the Super Nintendo isn't one you would normally associate with the shmup genre. What was Raiden Trad's U.S. publisher? Was it A, Takara? B, Spectrum Holobyte? C, JVC Musical Industries? Or D, Electrobrain?
JVC.
I'm going to go with Electrobrain. I own that.
Sure. B.
I'm a Raiden fan. Remember, we'd always argue about that.
And you would be correct, Deagle.
Yeah,
it was Electrobrain.
Oh, you know what? You know why I think JVC is because I got it mixed up with Jalico, and I was thinking I used to have Battle Unit Zeoth, which was by Jalico.
I thought you were thinking of Firepower 2000. That's another obscure SNES shmup. Thought I'd pull those out of the woodwork. Good question. I like it.
Battle Unit Zeoth, though, if you have an old Game Boy laying around, that was a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
At least it was when I was in third grade, second grade.
Second. Was Raiden Trad better than Fire Shark for the Genesis? That's what I want to know.
I haven't played Raiden Shark for the Fire Shark.
That was like the knockoff Raiden game.
Tiger Shark.
Okay. That was for the NES, not the Genesis.
No, there was a Genesis one. Fire Shark.
Really?
Yeah, Fire Shark. Oh. Yes.
It's Come Tiger on, Shark you owned it. NES, but it was also a Raiden knockoff.
And
I'd love to do a column on Lords of Thunder for like the Turbo graphics. I can't even get past the first fucking stage in that thing. And you can choose your path through it. It's like I always seem to get a game over, and I just cannot do a damn thing on that.
Well,
fantastic soundtrack, though.
Fire Shark was the name, Sean.
Okay, I never played it.
It was called Go Go Fire Shark in Japan. they like to put Go Go in front of everything. So should we Go Go to reader mail?
Go-go. Idea.
You do it.
Okay. Oh, fuck, let me find it.
Piccolo Jr. asks, where do you see the casual and core demographics headed?
Well,
casual's probably gradually going to come over to become the hardcore, maybe the next generation of hardcore in a couple of years. Well, a portion of it. Younger audiences, maybe, but the older audiences, yeah, they want their Scrabble.
No, well, I kind of agree. I always thought that, you know, titles like Guitar Hero and to a lesser extent, you know, some of the big ones, Call of Duty, GTA, Halo, Madden, those series were always were enjoyed by mainstream. But I think that the early success was because they were adopted by a more game-centric audience, more hardcore audience. And I think there's still success in the casual markets. I was looking at the October NPDs the other day. And if you look, Battlefield 3 sold more than four times what Just Dance 3 did. So I don't think there's any short-term concern about the, you know, hardcore demographic drying up.
I do think that the
so-called hardcore are the ones that paved the way for the casuals.
Yeah.
I see the core audience becoming the film buffs of gaming in the future. I feel like this is kind of... He's piggybacking on the next question.
Mm-hmm.
I'll guess what I'm gonna ask. Travis Touchdown asked, what do you expect from the next generation? Or what do you expect and what do you want from the next generation of consoles?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next generation of consoles is going to be the last generation of consoles. think
the before the one console future.
It's not exactly a one console future. I feel like the core gamer is going to evolve into, like I said, the film buff, where they're going to spend money on some sort of luxury item to play games with, but that games have become this sort of a ubiquitous thing that you play on all sorts of things that I don't think consoles are going to be necessary for much longer. I think they're going to keep getting more and more expensive with diminishing returns. I feel like the next console generation, just because we want to play better looking versions of the same games we've been playing for the past 30 years, I think it'll last about 10 years. And then, you know, something else, some sort of derivative on the PC model or something like that is going to take over for the sort of luxury gamer.
Mm-hmm. If you look at Microsoft, where consoles are going, they've always wanted their Xboxes to be set-top entertainment hubs.
Yeah.
So they're really going to push that. And I do agree with you that probably the gaming, it will accommodate gaming, but that's not going to be the main platform. Because if you look at the 360 and the people that buy it, you know, it's for, I don't know, now it's for browsing Netflix and doing all kinds of stupid shit like that. But
Xbox being X-Men.
That sounds so wrong.
If you never say that again, Sean, I'll be happy.
I just like that I made so much fun of that during the press conference, and then they turned that into a commercial. Xbox being X-Men.
So anyway, what do I want? I want more memory and a faster processor. I think graphically, I think we're fine where we're at. We mentioned earlier in the show we had some problems with stupid AI, which has to do with the current processing power. I think that load times and frame rates in order to create like a really immersive experience are the things we need to work on. But visually, the resolution and the amount of detail is perfectly fine.
I want a modular system. I think modular? The future consoles. No, I do. I think
like,
the future
like
consoles.
Like an Atom computer?
No, like the Saturn. I think if you have a system like the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox 720 that have easy to expand for someone who doesn't know anything about hardware, mm-hmm. you know, so new games come out and all right, so this is for Xbox 720 Plus. You need the right. Plus expansion, which then maybe throws in another core and then another couple units of RAM or whatever. You just require that.
But that segments your audience, though. Then you have haves and the have-nots. Look how many people.
And how is that?
There are some people that didn't have that Nintendo memory expansion card. I mean, even though most of the games would work without that, there were some people. And there were certain people you couldn't play, I thought, certain fighters on the Saturn unless you had that extra.
Yeah, exactly. But I think what we've learned in this generation is that if your early adopters are going to buy a new console eventually anyway, so if you continue to iterate the consoles, they'll stay ahead of the curve. But if their original one, by grace of God, survives, they'll have a way to get it to that point. I think we've grown up past where we were with the Saturn and the N64.
But if you want modular, why don't you just go PC?
PCs
are intimidating to your average person. If they're just putting it under their TV and they say, oh, this thing will make it go faster, and all they have to do is plug this little piece of plastic into this slot on the outside of their system that has this
that
shape
is
on it.
Graphics card.
32X.
Right, but a graphics card, you tell people they have to open up their box to put it in there, and all of a sudden they freak out. It's not there's a slot on the outside of your PC to stick something into. Anybody can set up a monitor to a PC. It's easy. There's one hole that the little HDMI thingy fits into.
Right.
And if they can do that with processors and RAM and all that stuff, then people will all of a sudden feel like they're doing something, and it'll keep them up to date on whatever they want to do. And that ties back into the idea of luxury gamers, where, yeah, it's segmenting your audience, but the people who want to play Call of Duty 6 and have this really great, wonderful graphical experience aren't going to be the people who are playing Angry Birds on their TV. And so those people don't need to have this super expensive system, but if you want to make it super expensive, that's available to you.
But I would worry about that creating not just the segmentation in terms of gamers, but that the industry would take advantage of that and make it so that if you wanted to play the latest game, like a Mech Assault game or a Call of Duty game or even the latest Halo, that they would take advantage of that and make it so that you have to buy this, this addition to your system to play this game. Because they know that people who are huge Halo gamers are gonna like find a way to trick their parents out of some money so that they can buy this new thing, but you're gonna create a bigger and bigger division. Whereas if they make one system that everyone can buy, then you don't have that like economic division of, well, some people can't afford to play the better games.
Well, I do think what would end up happening is, for example, Microsoft, if they wanted to have a RAM expansion, they would include it with Halo because that's their big first party game. I do think that's something that would happen, but I think that the people who play Halo would be willing to do that, and the people who play, you know, well, I would say a platformer, but there really aren't any Microsoft platformers anymore. But I don't know, people who play Disneyland Adventure Conquer, are not Conquer going 5. To.
Yeah, but Conquer, what about developers? Conquer. You know, I mean,
developers will develop for what is available. You know, developer can't say, hey, we need more RAM. They're not going to push Microsoft around.
No, but they might get upset if they develop a game and then they feel like they're going to lose gamers.
I think Activision would. That would be their plastic guitar. That would be their Skylander.
Well, yeah, fuck Activision, though. I think they're the exception, not the rule. I think especially right now, it would be a really bad time to try and implement a plan like that, because you've got the whole Occupy Wall Street 99 versus 1%, and you're basically doing that with gaming. You're saying, well, we're going to make an elitist group of gamers.
It's already an elitist group of gamers. Now we're saying that the price to entry is smaller.
But by the time that this came to market, it's going to be at least 2 years, and you know, I think that the current economic climate hopefully will change somewhat.
Yeah, there's no more Occupy LA.
That doesn't mean that problem isn't still there. It just means that they don't have any reason to be there petitioning.
No, they have reasons. They're just not allowed there anymore.
No, I'm saying they're just not allowed to be there.
And the mayor thanked them so nicely on Twitter. So Sage is going to occupy GameStop.
I'm going to occupy the heck out of the internet. That's what I'm going to occupy.
Occupy Skyrim.
Yes, that's what I want to do. Let's all do Occupy Skyrim.
I'm telling you, modular consoles is the future.
I don't know. I would just like a really good virtual reality system. That's what I would like.
This is my thing. I still don't understand why they have not made one of those stupid cheap monitor headsets with a Move attached to it.
I know, I don't know either. So stupid. It would make sense. It would be really cool. And you can almost do it anyway because they have the glasses now that you can put
on
your face.
That's what I'm saying. All you need to do is duct tape a Move controller to it and do head tracking like that. That's literally all you have to do.
Didn't somebody do that with a Wii remote or something several years ago?
Yep. Yeah, proof of concept stuff. Other thing that they did, which was really interesting, was they used the old PSI to show a first-person shooter, and way before Kinect came about, people were peeking around corners, and it was tracking that. And we have yet to see that in a game.
Well, it's like, just one of those things that just because the technology is there doesn't mean there's use for it. Like, that's the complaint we always have with customers who are like, why don't you guys support 32 touches? And I was like, well, what would you use 32 touches for? I mean, the hardware does it, but we haven't figured out a reason to use more than four.
How many fingers does a person have?
I know, exactly. The one used for 32 touches that has come about that I thought was interesting was some company figured out how to do wrist detection, where if it reads a certain amount of touches in a certain area, it recognizes that's your wrist and it ignores that, but it uses like 20 touches to do that. But I thought that was interesting.
I'm going to say another part of the body, but I'm too classy for that.
Well, it basically just says that there's a cluster of touches in one place to ignore it.
Gross.
Cluster touch.
Stop talking about clusters of touches.
Anyway, what I'm saying is just the thing is with virtual reality is that, I don't know if you've ever played a virtual reality game, is you can look around, but moving is never comfortable in virtual reality. It always.
But that's what I'm saying is that why don't they have something like in Hackers where you're on a. Well, no, but like a modern version of that. So you have a headset and then you have a thing that's essentially like a treadmill in a little ring that you can
How do you turn? How do you turn?
You turn by like turning your head and then you keep walking.
So you turn your head to the left and then you walk to the right, but you're somehow moving this way?
They can make it pressure sensitive so that the treadmill moves.
That's going to need more Kinect.
Yeah, and also think about this way. So the treadmill's moving this way. You turn your head. Does the whole treadmill move?
Yeah.
Okay, imagine you have an outer ring and you have an inner ring that you're standing on. And on the inner rings, much like the Wii can detect weight differentiation, so on the inner ring you have a movable pad like a treadmill, but it's not, you know, automatic. You have to walk to make it move like the old ones. And then it has weight differential sensors so that when you turn, because when you look somewhere, you shift your weight to that foot. So when you turn and look and you shift your weight, the inner ring shifts inside the outer ring, like it moves, so that you can continue walking forward, and that inner ring with the treadmill on it has shifted so that whatever way you're now facing, that's the new forward.
But so basically the next generation of consoles feet? Should be the last one until the holodeck.
Yeah, or it's going to look like
the treadmill, the mechanics, the basic mechanics of that treadmill don't work, though, unless you have like a series of ball bearings that are somehow wrapped in like a Crunchwrap Supreme of rubber that can move in 360 degrees. There's no way you can make that work.
No, you have to make a giant ball.
That's the other problem. You could have a 20-foot ball. Yes. That the top of it has this little platform on it, and you're walking on that.
I think it would have to be
living
more
room game.
Yeah. All I'm hearing is a lot of naysaying, and all that I was answering was Travis's fucking question, which was, what do you want from the next generation of consoles? And that's what the fuck I want. I didn't say it was going to happen tomorrow, but that's what I want.
I want holodeck. I want a holodeck. That's all I want.
Fuck you guys.
And Sage wants Dactyl Nightmare 4.
Fuck you. I like my idea, damn it, and I'm going to figure out a way to do it, and then you can suck it.
All right, so Trent B asks, do you believe this? And then links to the Gizmodo story about Kinect 2 being so accurate that it can read lips.
No.
No, I think it's bullshit.
Yeah.
I think that it can read something similar to lips. You figure the Kinect can track something like... No, I'm serious. I think the Kinect can track something like 20 points right now. Mm-hmm. And I think if you zoom that in all the way on your face and you make a program that just measures, you know, where your lips are and certain points of your face, it can measure that certain, if you exaggerate it, certain shapes on your mouth mean certain words.
No. You see, what you're missing, it reading lips isn't necessarily the acquisition of language. And I think you could say that it is, and you're kind of being strategically ambiguous here, it's looking at the movement of your lips, but the
right
transition into language, that's something much more complex.
Well, that's where I was getting to.
Okay.
Is I think at best it would be able to use that as a, if that's all it's doing, mind
because,
you.
Because look at voice to voice. We had Sage at the beginning of the show. She didn't understand a word I said. She thought I was saying stripper pole instead of, Marvel versus Capcom 3.
What I'm saying is it could use that as a crutch on top of voice recognition to make sure that it's recognizing the right words. Like if it looked like you said this and it sounded like you said the same thing, then it knows that's what it is.
So
but then you have to...
When you were playing Scrabble and you said, I think I need to take a D right now.
It's not going to think you said that you need to take a P right now because it knows that when you make the P sound, your mouth's different.
Right.
What was I saying? Oh, but you also have to remember that if it's doing that, it's not doing anything else, like because it needs X number of touches to follow your mouth, probably a lot. And so you're not going to be able to have it read your lips while you're rowing a boat or doing whatever the hell else people use Kinects for. And Deeple just made an Ace Ventura joke on the outline, so I think that's our cue. To start the outro.
I didn't do all of it. Somebody
If you would like to compliment your listening with a bit of reading, might I suggest checking out www.tech-gaming.com for the latest reviews, editorials, and Ace Ventura jokes. If you like our opinions on gaming and pretty much anything else, you can follow us on Twitter. Robert Allen is at tech_gaming. I am at Sean Nola. Sage is at Samurage, and Eric is at Blue Swim. And subscribe to us on iTunes. There's a new link, new art, and somehow put it in, made it into there. We also used to have a sponsor or something at the end. I think there's one missing, but D's missing.
Sponsor?
Thanks for listening. I don't know. We used to have a D. We just have an A, B, and C now.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. D was get a Gravatar because I like seeing your faces. Except for the one guy whose icon looks like the Cupcake and Crossbones from Johnny Cupcakes. You can keep yours because that's cool. I don't know which one.
What? I don't even know what that meant.
Johnny Cupcakes makes t-shirts, and one of our readers, their random Gravatar thing, looks like the Cupcake and Crossbones.
Johnny Cupcake? I gotta even look that up. What is Johnny Cupcakes?
It's a designer t-shirts. My girlfriend's little brother is all about them. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show, guys.
Okay, bye.
Adios.
Leave my ignorance of Johnny Cupcakes out.
Are you doing okay? Pasadena fell apart today, Sage.
Really? How much of it?
Whoa, Travis touchdowns is really cool too. This can't be a real Gravatar thing.
Why? What is it?
What is it?
It looks like a bearded nose and mouth. Looks like Chuck Norris's beard.
What?